Hello, happy Monday. Welcome to the Not The Top 20 podcast. It's sponsored by Betfair. It's all things EFL, which this week means 14 games to recap. 3 in League 1, 11 in League 2. And one team, George, to welcome. One team to welcome back. Chesterfield FC, back in the EFL as of the 24-25 season. And it's quite nice, isn't it? Because the first two full seasons of us doing this thing, they were relegated both seasons. Finished bottom in League 1, finished bottom in League 2. So I'd say without even doing the research, they might have the lowest win ratio of any Not The Top 20 covered team. Welcome back, Chesterfield.
Great to have them back as well. It feels like they are an EFL institution. They're a team that I grew up as an Oxford fan with a sporting club that were always in and around the same leagues as Chesterfield. There was a time when I was at university where Chesterfield were one of the best teams in League Two and kind of one of the biggest teams in League Two. So obviously their plight was quick. You know, we were not a good luck charm for the Spirites, but they've got a manager in Paul Cook that we know, you know, that kind of, I'd almost say that his career, albeit a bit later, has kind of mirrored Chesterfield's a bit, where there was a time where he was seemingly kind of the go-to person for success in League Two and was a very solid option to do so. But he's had to dip into non-league to bring a team back up, and he's done so impressively. So I was watching, well, I didn't watch the game, but I was keeping an eye on their game in midweek when they went to Halifax needing, was it just a draw to get promoted? And they lost the game 4-2. They went 1-0 up and conceded three times towards the end of the first half. But no such issues against Boreham Wood on the weekend, beating them 3-0. And so, yeah, welcome back.
Yeah, and you know, we are not National League experts, but one of the many excellent aspects of the NTT 20 realm is Not The Top 20 squad or NTT 20 squad. It's something we're really proud of. But more than that, I think it's an amazing place. I think it's an amazing place in the current digital football space as well. And so, of course, we do want more people to sign up to be a part of it as much as anything. And the reason I bring up NTT 20 squad is that we have threads, chat threads for, of course, the Championship, League One, League Two, but also quite a lot of other things that interest us and the NTT 20 squad community. And unsurprisingly, one of those is non-league, and there is a thriving non-league thread, and it's so fun to catch up on every couple of days. And the star of it really is Ryan Deeney, who you will have heard on this podcast before. He is an expert when it comes to the National League, kind of NTT 20 adjacent, or maybe a cousin, if you like. And he's on there and he gives so much good insight into the National League teams, which means that's been my sort of number one way really of keeping up with the Chesterfield story this season. You know, you mentioned that they stumbled a little bit in midweek. They have slowed down slightly in terms of their points return, but that's only because they've been as good as promoted since late last year, really. They picked up 80 points from their first 31 matches. So 80 points from a possible 93 at that stage after 31 games. For reference, Notts County had 74 and Wrexham had 75. So, of course, they haven't had the sort of rival that Notts and Wrexham had last year, which is why Chesterfield ended up in the playoffs. But, you know, reading what Ryan wrote when they were promoted on Saturday, he said, regardless of budget, this has been a sensational campaign. And Paul Cook really has overseen a complete turnaround, because 6 seasons in the National League, we often talk of it as a difficult league to get out of. That has been the case for Chesterfield. Double relegation and then 6 years in the National League, and now on their way back with a manager in Paul Cook who gets his second Chesterfield promotion, his fourth total English pyramid promotion in 11 seasons. It is some record. And just in terms of what we can expect to see next season, Ryan's given some insight into the squad as well. Listeners of the pod will know a lot of the names from guys we've spoken about over the last few years. They do have a core of experienced former EFL types, if you like, and quite sort of Paul Cookie types as well, I would suggest. So Tom Naylor in midfield, formerly of Portsmouth and Wigan, has been incredible for them this season. Will Grigg up top has 25-odd goals. Michael Jacobs also formerly of Portsmouth, another former Paul Cook player. But people like Ollie Banks, Liam Mandeville, Ryan Colclough, like all of these guys are really important parts of this Chesterfield team as well. I'm probably most excited to see Armando Dobra. Don't know about you, George, but when I have caught Chesterfield games on TNT over the last few years, he always stands out as a really exciting, direct, tricky winger, former Ipswich youngster.
Yeah, I've watched quite a lot of him because he's been linked to Oxford twice in the last two windows. So I've done the deep dive, and he's a very exciting player, someone who has a lot of technical ability. You know, he's not necessarily that kind of speedy winger that you'd anticipate who'd be effective down in the National League. He's someone who's, his technical ability is far better than the level he's playing at. You know, he was quite a big deal when he came through at Ipswich. They were very excited about him for a time, but he came through at probably the worst moment where, as a football club, they were kind of on their knees for a bit, and he was brought into the first team, but was part of a very poor side. I'm excited to have them back. I'm excited to see what they do. Excited to have Paul Cook back. Normally, when a team wins the National League, they kind of get inserted as one of the favourites in League Two immediately. Now, it'll obviously depend what happens with Stockport, with Wrexham, with Mansfield. But I kind of have a feeling that the fanfare around Chesterfield next season probably won't be quite as loud as Salford, Stockport, Wrexham. But given how far they've won the league by, you have to anticipate they're coming up and they'll be a big force in League Two immediately.
I think we can expect the squad to remain largely the same. Ryan said a lot of the contract situations are all sorted already, and Cook does love having these kind of trusty lieutenants, doesn't he? The likes of Naylor, etc. in League Two, you'd have thought will step up very comfortably indeed. And then there's guys like Colclough and Mandeville, interesting, technical, exciting attacking players who probably have things to prove in the EFL, same as Dobra. And these guys have been some of the star players going forward for Chesterfield this season. And I always think of 4-2-3-1 when I think of Paul Cook. So I'm hoping and expecting to see a classic Cook 4-2-3-1 in League Two next season. And just thinking about the heft of the club, because for some listeners who haven't followed the EFL for that long, as you say, Chesterfield have... Well, they've been up and they've been down now, haven't they, over the last two decades or so. But just as a point of reference, their average attendance this season, 7,500, a little bit more than that, top in the National League. And that this season in League Two would place them around the sixth or seventh mark. So if you use that as a basic marker to see sort of not necessarily size of the club, which is not a conversation I'm normally that interested in, but just in terms of what they may be able to generate revenue-wise and where we might place them in the League Two food chain. Again, you know, they certainly won't be needing to punch above their weight, I don't think, in budgetary terms. So, welcome back, Chesterfield. We will talk about you again on those 1-24s. But we haven't finished this season yet. George, we had a significant weekend in League One. Only three games, but it affected the top, the bottom, and the playoffs. Starting at the top, where Derby County missed a huge opportunity to put themselves 7 points clear of Bolton. That's what it would have been had they beaten Northampton Town, who'd been on a poor run themselves. But this was very much one in the eye for anyone thinking Cobblers are on the beach. A 1-0 win for Northampton at home to Derby.
A weird game this, because the story of it, from a Northampton point of view, is an unbelievable goal, a Robin Van Persie-esque goal from Sam Hoskins. The ball played by Apare, who absolutely did Sonny Bradley on the left-hand side, and then clipped a ball over the top. And the camera angle is absolutely perfect to see Hoskins with a cushion volley back across the keeper into the bottom left-hand corner. However, and you know, all credit to Cobblers for picking up this win and for making those of us who kind of ruled out their chances look fairly silly. There's a blatant foul on Kane Wilson in the build-up to the goal. And I understand that the argument from a home fan's perspective will be he's just run into him. And often those aren't fouls. Often when you see a player like Kane Wilson knock the ball around a defender, then just run in and go down, they're not fouls. But the difference is here is he's pushed over. Like the arms are up from I think it's Manny Mont. And he pushes Kane Wilson before kind of tumbling to the ground himself. And you can see that he's fully expecting the referee to blow the whistle. And I can't really understand why he doesn't. So a slice of fortune there. And then no fortune in this for the home side. But then Derby just missing hosts of chances throughout the game. You know, Waghorn blazed over the bar from 6 yards just before the Hoskins goal. Ebu Adams missed two very good opportunities. Waghorn missed another one later on in the game. They created more than enough in this game to go home, not just with a point, but with 3 points. But it was their own wastefulness that was to blame. So, you know, the way I'm looking at this in terms of the title race, in terms of the promotion battle, is a huge result with Derby dropping those points. And great for John Brady's side to get over the line. But I've seen Derby create far fewer and worse opportunities in this in away games this season and pick up 3 points. And I think they've got every right to feel aggrieved by the referee decision ahead of the goal. So, you know, at the end of March, I guess you can't really say no need to panic, because it's the results business here that really matters. And they've obviously, having beaten Bolton last time out, dropped a bit of a clanger here by not picking up 3 points. But I think they were pretty unfortunate here to come away with nothing, even if it was their own finishing that was mainly to blame.
And they came up against what I think is a pretty classic Brady Northampton Town performance, specifically bringing up the manager, because in his own words, he felt that in previous fixtures, they had lost their edge. And that was kind of at the heart of any calls that Northampton may have hit the 50-point mark, patted themselves on the back for a great achievement after winning promotion, and then hit the beach, flip-flops and all. But here, with Jack Sowerby, who's normally at the centre of midfield for them, having to play at centre-back, with Manny Mont, who is a colossus of a man and a defender, but is certainly not your archetypal nippy wing-back, playing at left wing-back and almost scoring like a Roberto Carlos-esque shot which hit the post for Cobblers. You know, they were up against it in a number of ways, and the way that they defended their lead was very, very impressive. They're on course for a highest league finish since 07-08, so it could be Cobblers' best finish in 15 years or so. As for Derby, George isn't worried about you, but Portsmouth next up, Wickham, Blackpool, Leyton Orient. It's a tough four fixtures. There was a feeling that beating Bolton would be the significant result in the sort of automatic promotion picture, with Portsmouth seemingly swanning off into the sunset. But still, possibly, some twists and turns to come. Now to the playoff picture, George. There was one team involved playing, and it was Stevenage. A Stevenage team in really poor form heading into the game, travelling to a team at the bottom of the table in Carlisle. And 2-0 to Carlisle at half-time. Stevenage putting in a bit of a stinker of a performance, but two late goals to go from 2-0 down to a 2-2 draw and a 0-1. I wonder if this is as simple as a team with quite a weak constitution, not used to winning or therefore seeing out wins, versus one that is still, despite poor form, sort of scrapping and fighting physically as much as psychologically. I noticed big Verdane Oliver certainly made a difference after coming off the bench.
Yeah, it's obviously so hard post-event to kind of work out why a team has collapsed, but you have to think that there is probably some kind of psychological issue here when you look at Carlisle's record in recent times. I read Hugh in the weekend notes mentioning that they've scored first in 7 of their last 12 games, Carlisle. They've only won one of those games and drawn one of those games. So it's quite clearly an issue there where they're okay when there's nothing in their hands, when they've got nothing to lose. But as soon as you know they're in a position to gain anything out of a game, they really struggled to maintain a performance level. The penalty was clearly the moment this game swung on. Couldn't really see from the angle that we had. I mean, it looked didn't look clear cut. It didn't necessarily look like it was a poor decision either. But you kind of always thought then, despite Stevenage being second best up until the penalty decision, that once they scored the penalty through Alex McDonald, it was always going to be a bit of an onslaught. And that's what it proved to be, you know, an aerial onslaught for the most part, with a few chances from corners and set pieces before Terence Van Cooten was the man who profited from some, you know, I don't want to criticise the keeper, but I think it seemed like he was really trying to parry the ball out of danger, but ended up parrying it straight into Van Cooten's path. I mean, for Crawley, it's wholly irrelevant. It's frustrating, but I mean, they are going to get relegated, and I can't imagine there are too many Carlisle fans celebrating the second goal, thinking, "Hold on, this is it. We're going to win this game. We're going to win our next eight, and we're going to stay up." For Stevenage, a point at Carlisle, I would say, is still a really disappointing result. But the manner of it, when they were basically beaten, will give them some hope. But with Lincoln in particular playing the way they are, I just can't think that their current performance levels are going to be enough to get them into the top six. But I mean, that might change. I mean, I still think that, you know, the way that they play and their strength from set pieces, and even last season where the trend of their season followed a pretty similar pattern to this season, where they started so well and then kind of slowly petered out during the new year, they finished it fairly strong again. And I think Evans, you know, I wouldn't rule out Evans finding a way to get them back on a straight path. Maybe it's when they're chasing again. Maybe it's when they're not the team who are in the kind of pole position to get into the playoffs.
I mean, yeah, they definitely need a shot of something, because this performance was one of their poorest, really, outside of the kind of getting out of jail towards the end of the game. They've only got 3 points in their last seven games, and chance creation is just a massive issue for them at the moment. They're still going down broadly the same avenues as they were at the start of the season, but for whatever reason, whether it's some sort of physical fatigue and or what we've kind of alluded to, where maybe it's a little easier to play them second time round, maybe. Teams a little bit smarter to what they're going to come up against. I don't know, but something obviously has to change if they are to get themselves back into sixth spot. That's Oxford's at the moment on 63, Stevenage 62 after that point, then Lincoln 61, Blackpool 60, Leighton Orient 58. So really exciting part of the League One table. All of a sudden, the playoff push. Just on Carlisle, Daniel Butterworth obviously catching the eye here with both goals for them, and two really nice takes as well. He'd actually caught my eye watching highlights of the last couple of games as well. He scored for Carlisle coming off the bench against Derby, and then he started against Shrewsbury and was clearly Carlisle's most threatening player, albeit in another defeat. Two brilliant finishes here. With both feet, his shooting looks powerful and accurate. I noticed that he's contracted for next season as well. So from my point of view, always looking for kind of new players who can establish themselves and be some of the players that we talk about more regularly. Butterworth has really struggled to kind of nail down a spot in this team, but I'd love to see him get more starts between now and the end of the season and, you know, kind of work out what's best for him in terms of role and position, because he's quite short. He's certainly not a striker that you're going to be playing balls into, you know, back to goal, or he's not going to be disrupting defenders physically too much. But there's just something in the way that he's taken these chances recently that makes me think, you know, in the right setup, this could be a player that scores a lot of goals, certainly at League Two level, if Carlisle keep him and maybe provide him the right system, the right partners for him. That's a big positive for them coming out of this game. And then down at the bottom, George, massive game between Burton and Port Vale. At Burton, and heading into it, the picture was that Burton were on 39, along with Cambridge, the two just outside the relegation places. Vale were 23rd, second bottom, on 33. So there were 6 points between these two teams. Burton could have made themselves very comfy indeed with a home win. That is absolutely not what happened. Vale winning it late, but probably deservedly so. 1-0, an excellent counter-attack. Ryan Loft and Ethan Chislett combining brilliantly, Chislett to Loft, back to Chislett, whose shot was saved onto the post, and there was Loft to roof it to get it lifted over the despairing dive of the defender. It was a really exciting goal. The away end went nuts. It's Vale's first win of 2024, and, you know, could be hugely significant, mate. You know, just 3 points now is still plenty to play for.
Yeah, this was a disastrous result for Burton, and I'd also argue for Cambridge as well, because, you know, if I understand that Burton are kind of vying with Cambridge for relegation right now, but if Port Vale lose this game, then you're kind of back to looking at just one relegation spot, albeit, and, you know, Burton wouldn't have been safe. But now this is so open, and Burton were really poor. Like, I was surprised. You know, we spoke on the betting show about this. Vale came into this game having having not won since the 29th of December. I watched them against Oxford. There was no signs of this kind of result coming at all. Whereas under Martin Patterson, I know Burton's recent form wasn't great, but there were shoots of green shoots in their performances themselves that I thought maybe would see them against weaker opposition come here and get the win. But they've not, for the first time recently at home, been unable to score against a poor team. And that is a massive concern. You know, this was fairly end to end. You know, I would say that Burton probably had the better chances in the first kind of hour or so, and then as the game wore on, Port Vale really turned the screw in for the last half an hour or so. It was all Port Vale, and the fact
that Burton only had one shot in the last 40 minutes is big red flag territory.
For sure. And also in the first half, Loft missed a one-on-one that he put the wrong side of the post. And he did very well, because it would have been easy with the goal itself for him to kind of be direct and go straight for goal. But he managed to pick out a really nice pass to Chislett. And he wasn't quite able to finish, but Loft was still there to tap home the rebound. It's a massive win for them. I mean, it's got to be the kickstart for them to improve. Because under Darren Moore, up until this moment, there had been no real reason to be in any way positive, and you know, just shows how tight it is down there that you can not win a game for so long. You can basically consign to relegation, then 1-3 points up against a team just above you, and you're right back in it again. But with Burton, it's very, very hard now to find anything positive to say apart from the fact that there's still Cambridge, there's still Cheltenham, and there's still Port Vale beneath them, and Fleetwood. Like, there are still enough teams down there, but if you're not going to be beating Port Vale at home right now, if you're not going to be able to show a bit more than they did, yeah, it's not looking promising. This is an advertisement for NordVPN.
George, you recently became a father. Does your daughter listen to Not the Top 20?
Well, she's only just turned one, so it's a bit early for her to be into football. But we also do try and keep her off devices. It's a scary world out there, and when she gets older, the last thing we want is for our daughter to be vulnerable to some of the dark corners of the internet.
Yeah, I can see that. In that case, you should protect your whole household with one NordVPN account, including all of your shared gadgets and devices. You'll also be alerted if your personal details come into hackers' hands and can browse in peace of mind knowing that NordVPN does not track your online activities.
That all sounds great, but what if she's throwing a tantrum abroad because she's desperate to watch an episode of Miss Rachel?
Well, NordVPN has you covered there too, as you can access your home content while travelling.
Sign up to NordVPN today at nordvpn.com/NTT20. It's risk-free with NordVPN's 30-day money-back guarantee. Plus, as part of their birthday celebrations, you'll receive 4 months extra and a bonus gift.
11 games in League 2, two of them televised on Saturday, involving two of the top teams, three of the top four teams heading into the weekend. I'll just touch on the league leaders, Mansfield, who drew at home to Colchester, who are third bottom. This, on paper, looks like a bit of a botched job from Mansfield Town. But anyone who's listened to the pod for the last few weeks knows that one of my sort of stances at the moment is that Colchester just aren't nearly as bad as the league table suggests. And so I wasn't that surprised to see a strong Colchester performance, to see them take the lead early in this game, a really nice take from Anderson on the right side to put them ahead after good work from Tom Hopper to keep the ball alive. And they put in a good display. They still, as you'd expect, came under significant pressure from Stags. Loads of opportunities and loads of sensational saves from Colchester's on loan Palace goalkeeper, Owen Goodman. Now, it's not the first time I've brought up Goodman, because about 3 or 4 weeks ago, there were back-to-back games against Forest Green and Harrogate where I felt Colchester was significantly the better side. And on both occasions, Goodman conceded goals late on that really scuppered his team, that led to them dropping points and kind of helped me build this idea that I'm convinced they're not playing like a relegation team, and that's why I'm just not that concerned that they will be caught by those two beneath them. In this game, he showed why he's got England Youth International caps, because he made some astonishing saves from Mansfield efforts and was unfortunate in the end with the goal from Lewis Brunt that they did score. There wasn't really much he could have done about it. But to be fair, having made it 1-1, you'd expect the Alamo, really, for Mansfield, and it wasn't really like that. Cole, you got themselves back in business. They finished pretty strongly, actually, and Tavide hitting the post on the break was, you know, the closest that anyone came to scoring the winner. So a really impressive display from Colchester, I think. Obviously disappointing from a Mansfield point of view, but they're just not playing like a relegation team. Like, I don't rate them as such at all. I think the league table is lying quite a bit on account of all the games that they've had postponed, on account of the fact that since the Cowleys took charge, they've had 7 away games out of 11. And then just a weird quirk where they just draw almost every game. In fact, 8 of the 11 that the Cowleys have had so far have been a draw, and so many within that have not been what I would consider like losing draws, second best where they've nicked it. Quite often it's the other way around. So it's a bit of a weird record that the Cowleys have at Colu with one win, with 8 draws and with only 2 defeats. But overall, with the amount of games that they have in hand and the amount that they have to play at home, albeit on a boggy pitch, if they do get the games on, I'm still just very confident that this team has quality in terms of the playing personnel. Like, you look at their starting 11, that's not a team that should be threatened with relegation. And then I also think that the Cowleys have a good grip on things. It feels like everyone is pretty much enthralled to them at the moment. And they have easily enough quality, both as tacticians and motivators, I think, to make Colu, in my eyes, likely to be safe yet again. And hopefully they can secure that, well, hopefully from their point of view, not hopefully from the teams beneath them. George, there was also live on Sky, Stockport against MK Dons. This one was massive, and it finished 5-0 to Stockport. What?
Such a weird game, this, because for the first half an hour of this game, MK Dons were the better side. Like, they were the team in the ascendancy. They were the team creating and missing good opportunities. And it felt like it was going kind of with the form book, with MK, the form side coming into it, the side trying to chase Stockport down, who were kind of faltering. But maybe this day was always going to come for Stockport, because, you know, you've been talking there about Colchester being in a false position. Like, there's Stockport have just absolutely not been as bad as their recent run suggested they've been. Like, the drop-off has been massive in terms of kind of points per game. But if you look at the underlying numbers, if you look at the shot numbers, if you look at the XG numbers, whatever you want to take, big chances, they're still consistently one of, if not the best team in the league. And it's been their finishing that has massively let them down. That, and, you know, defensive, they've still been sound. They've been drawing games 0-0 quite a lot, and games that they've created a lot. So maybe it was inevitable they were going to have a day where they were going to concede quite a few chances, but not let any in, and then score at a rate, you know, the total XG was 2 for their 5 goals. You know, they did create a lot, but they didn't have loads of shots. They had a pretty ropey goalkeeping performance from Michael Kelly to thank for these as well. Certainly the first goal, he was massively at fault for. I'd have a look at a couple of the other ones as well, both in terms of when he was rounded by Oluwafe, and then even the Lemon Evans goal. It doesn't feel, it's a long range strike, but it doesn't feel like it's necessarily one of those that the keeper can't do any better with. So that, yes, Stockport were clinical on the day. That this has been coming, they've deserved this. MK will come away wondering how on earth they've managed to, you know, go in at half time 3-0 down in a half where they'll feel that they were the better side, but individual errors costing them. And their away form generally isn't great. You know, the win at Mansfield a couple of weeks ago is the outlier from their away form. It's at home where they're so strong. And that's something they're going to have to work out if they are going to get up through the playoffs, because that now looks, with the Wrexham result, with the Stockport result, I think MK's chances of finishing the top three without a huge blow on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, absolutely no doubt about that. MK were clearly felt like the most likely team to catch Stockport, Wrexham, Mansfield, and therefore from a Stockport point of view, God, there was a lot of tension and jeopardy riding on this game with a 1-point gap. It's now 4, and Stockport have the 2 games in hand. You look at their fixture list and you feel like there aren't too many gremlins, albeit, interesting quirk, they're playing each of the bottom 3, Forest Green, Sutton and Colu, away from home, all of them, in their next 4 games, with Wimbledon at home in there as well. So, you know, I have tried to stay pretty bullish on Stockport throughout. I had messages last week from people worrying about Stockport bets that they had, and I was staying pretty firm. I was probably wobbling strongest after 20 minutes of the game, when MK had 7 shots to Stockport's 2, and as you say, looked much the better side. But it's just amazing how quickly football can change and how much composure and confidence plays a part in that. Like, everything they haven't been recently, they all of a sudden were. And as you mentioned, it was all thanks to a goalkeeping error that gave them an empty net for Camps to tap in. But then the quality of the goals after that, whether it was Camps's little scoop through ball for Madden, whether it was Oluwafe with the composure to go around the keeper and finish, and then Lemon Hay Evans as well. you know, it was just so funny to see how, with a little helping hand to get kickstarted, like amazing pendulum swings in terms of execution just based on that. I was, you know, the formations and personnel that Challoner goes with can be really quite funky. And in this game, I couldn't work out based on the starting 11 how they would set up. In the end, it was, you know, they are just very flexible Stockport. They've got a lot of players, whether it's versatile defenders who can play either like outside centre-back in a three or full-back in a four or at a push even wing-back, people like Noyle and Touré and Cass and Bristow, all these guys, they allow them and they allow Challoner to do some like quite fun, unpredictable stuff. And I think that's what they did here because Lemonhay Evans pretty much played right wing-back, Todd Kane right centre-back. Nick Powell was the deepest central midfielder in possession with Callum Camp just ahead of him. And then, you know, Madden drifts around all over the place. Wootton and Olafe are now a kind of quite a nice fixed front too. And they've got a lovely, you know, you can see on paper and in the flesh, having the physical focal point of Wootton and the in-behind threat of Olafe is just so difficult for League Two defences to handle for 90 minutes. And yeah, it was a funky team that they went with. They like to go very man-to-man without the ball, quite sort of ambitious in their off-ball approach, as they were again here. And, well, it didn't look like the right approach 20 minutes in, but it certainly was in the end. It was another strong week for another team in the top three. George Wrexham went to Grimsby, and they're 3-0 up after 40 minutes, and it's just pure quality. Firstly, from Cannon to work a bit of space 30 yards out. He hit a shot. It's a powerful shot, and it's a bobbler, but this is a goalkeeping error. Harvey Cartwright, I'm afraid, gets too low. Maybe it hits something. Whatever, it doesn't look great. Bounces over him. It's a shot that you want your goalkeeper saving, and it just sums up how much of an issue Grimsby have found in goal this season. Whether it was Eastwood at the start of the season or Cartwright now, you know, the underlying numbers do not paint a pretty picture when it comes to their shot-stopping stats and their goals-prevented stats. And, you know, this just felt like another manifestation of that. It puts Grimsby on the back foot, which they are doubly so a few minutes after, with a beautiful, beautiful finish from Cannon. Such quality and power in the strike on the counter-attack. And Paul Mullen doing similar with a swivel volley over his shoulder with his weaker left foot to make it 3-0 after 40 minutes. So really strong performance, strong execution, the word, George, and another big win for Wrexham in the context of that MK defeat.
Yeah, but a big win for Wrexham. I feel sorry for the Grimsby fans who go to home games and consistently see the opposition just score so consistently with basically every opportunity, because that was the case again here. Like, the obvious goalkeeping error for the first, as you say, and then two just unbelievable finishes, like moments of real quality, and the game's over for Grimsby without really necessarily doing loads wrong in between both boxes. It wasn't like it was an onslaught from Wrexham. It wasn't like the pressure was mounting. But as you say, yeah, I mean, only 3-0 down after however long. It's an uphill task from there. And, you know, they got a goal back late on. They put some pressure on at 3-1. But, you know, they're not safe yet. You know, and especially, as you mentioned, if your feeling about Colchester is correct, if Sutton are going to continue playing the way that they are. You know, I know some people still think that Forest Green under Steve Cotterill will be able to save them. You know, two teams have to go down, and Grimsby probably don't have enough points on the board quite yet to ensure it isn't them. But again, like I've said it so many times with them, like in so many of their defeats under Artel, you look at the scoreline and you think, oh God, and then you watch it and you watch the game and you're like, they're being unlucky. Like, there isn't loads wrong in terms of what they're doing. They're just moments of quality for the opposition undo them. But for Town fans, that isn't going to be enough, realistically. But the form have been pretty good coming into this, and defensively, they've been way, way better. So no need to panic. But I think it's more realism that the job isn't done yet.
Well, let's go to the relegation situation. I will just mention the points tallies at the top so I can paint the picture for you guys. Mansfield 73, Stockport 71 now, having played a game fewer than Mansfield and Wrexham as well, who are 1 point behind them. Then it's a 3 point gap to MK, and they've played 40, where Mansfield and Wrexham have played 39 and Stockport 38. So it really was a significant weekend at the top of League Two. And the upshot is the top three, who have ended up sort of establishing themselves over the whole season as the big three, with Notts County having absolutely played themselves out of that moniker. They are all looking very strong as we head into Easter. And, you know, it would take now MK having an incredible end to the season and one of these three botching games in hand and botching the end of the campaign for it not to be that three that go up automatically. Down at the bottom, we just talked about Grimsby. They lost. They're on 39. Cole U, who drew, are on 34, having played a game less than Grimsby. And then it's just 1 point now to Sutton George, albeit they have played 40 games. So Cole U, 3 games in hand over them. Grimsby, 2 games in hand over them. But back-to-back wins for Sutton United, this time 3-1 against Accrington, wearing a special edition Royal Aubergine purple-coloured kit made by O'Neill's, dedicated to supporting the Royal Marsden Cancer Charity and all the vital work they do. We love one-off charity kits, and we love Aubergine, and Sutton loved playing in it, George. They said Baba Ganoush to Aki.
I had some Baba Ganoush for lunch. It's mad. I was looking at this morning. Sutton, we all remember at Christmas time, were beaten 8-0 by Stockport and beaten 2-0 by Mansfield. They then, of course, made a managerial change with Steve Morrison coming in. Even though they've lost 7 league games since then, they've all been by a solitary goal, which in itself is telling in terms of their general performance level and the fact that teams are not able to blitz them. And then you look at their recent form, like their last 6 games, seven games, they've won 3, they've drawn 2, and they've lost 2. And those 2 are both away defeats, just 1-0 at Crewe and against Tranmere. So Crewe, a team who will likely be in the playoffs, and Tranmere, the team who under Nigel Adkins have been one of the best teams in the whole division. So this kind of gets me on to, and here against Accrington, they were magnificent. Like, they created so many opportunities. They weren't the best defensively, but they have maintained their threat from set pieces. Betting show favourite Omar Shomi with a goal on the line, unbacked by us. But they were really good. And they were really good when they beat Notts County, and they were good when they beat Forest Green last time out. Like, I understand that the 40 games they've played means that they're position in the league table is slightly mythical, because, you know, Forest Green have a game on them, but we know how tough Forest Green's running is, and then Colchester have 3 games in hand on them, which is significant. But I really strongly think that Sutton are going to pick up quite a lot of points in their finals, 6 games of the season, where they've got winnable games. You know, they've got Swindon at home, they've got Harrogate away. You're looking at Salford away next up as being a game that is difficult, but by no means impossible. Like, the 2 teams that they play left in the top 7 are Stockport, MK and Crawley. When you consider how Forest Green have to play all of the top 5 still to come, like, I personally think Sutton will be clear of Forest Green come the end of the season. And I really think they're going to keep Colchester up to task, and possibly Grimsby as well. So I've been impressed with them over a few weeks now, and they're the team that I kind of see as being much, much better than their league position right now. And they're kind of getting the results to go alongside it. The games played is the issue here. Like, it's a lot closer. Sorry, it's a lot closer in the league table than realistically the gap between Colchester and Sutton. But this, you know, it's not a case. If I was a Colchester fan, I wouldn't be looking at those 3 games in hand and thinking to myself, okay, it's fine. We've got 2 rubbish teams below us and we've got 3 games in hand on them. I think they're going to be kept up to it, and they're going to have to pick up points in order to keep Sutton at bay.
Certainly got one of the standout individuals of this month in League 2. Charlie Lakin got all 3 assists here. He was initially given that goal that Shomi nodded in on the line. It would have been an Olympic goal. It was an absolutely brilliant delivery from the corner, whether it was Shomi's or Lakin's. And it's just testament to the quality that he has, because he was the one that set Smith away in the first half, streaking in behind to score 1-1. He was the one that played the ball out into Adam Malachi for a beautiful goal, the Millwall loanee, for his first EFL goal. A hat-trick of assists, 4 goals and 4 assists in 9 games from a central midfield role. This isn't an attacker. This is someone who, from deep, is playing progressive passes, killer passes, providing good set piece delivery, just opening up defences in a way that, that Sutton have been missing all season. So credit to whoever was involved in bringing Lakin in. I mean, Morrison made quite a few signings in January and was quite adamant that, that he was going to do that. So I would suggest it was quite possibly come through him and his contacts book. That's where it looked like a lot of those transfers came from. But it's given them a flicker. To what extent did Forest Green's flicker die over the weekend, George? Having lost to Sutton, which was about as bad a result as they could possibly have had, to then go to Doncaster and essentially curl up into a ball and
cry.
This is an interesting way of trying to cut down a points gap. That you can kind of understand the logic between Steve Cotterill going in and saying, we've been too open, we've been too soft, we've got to, like, you know, bunker down and grind it out. And then games like this happen and you think, well, you've not done anything here. You've just sat and let Donny take shot after shot. And eventually they scored two goals, Molyneux with the first, and then his sort of cross-come shot saw Keogh tapping in to his own net for an own goal. It was so passive for Forest Green, and it's kind of a stark way of approaching things when it doesn't go well in particular.
Yeah, massively. I think it might be down to, in the 2-0 wins they had over Walsall and Bradford, that had everyone thinking they were going to get their way out of it before the back-to-back defeats we've just seen. They conceded 17 shots against Bradford and conceded 17 shots against Walsall, 8 and 5 for themselves. So even though the results were good, I'm pretty sure Cotter was watching that and thinking, hold on, like we need to improve defensively, without really giving much thought to the attacking side of things, because they'd scored 4 goals in 2 games and like, everything was okay. And you look at the recent results and they were okay. But like this was just a totally lifeless display, like absolutely no attacking threat whatsoever, barely able to create an opportunity, not looking particularly solid at the back. You know, Steve Cotterill's come in and he's doing it his own way. And you know, sometimes you still get Bristol City fans reminding you that Steve Cotterill's Bristol City were free scoring, free flowing attacking football. But anyone who watched Shrewsbury over the last 3 or 4 seasons will know that either whether by design or by need, that style of management has gone now. And I, you know, Forest Green are not in a position where, in my mind at least, going into games and really relying on, you know, nicking goals is going to be enough to keep them up here. Like, and if you look again, I know it's boring to some people, but you look at the underlying numbers, basically from the whole season up until Cotterill came in and then the time Cotterill's been in, there's a big drop-off. And like they were one of the big data outliers under Horseman. Things obviously didn't go well. Things under Deeney didn't go well. There was kind of some bright sparks early on. But now, I think if you're one of these top 5 teams and you're looking at your game against Forest Green coming up, they will watch these games back and they will think to themselves, okay, this is great. We're playing up against a side who are offering so little in attack. Like, obviously, they will try and change things until then. But this individual performance at Doncaster was, it looked like a team to me who were beyond reproach. But then I kind of thought that with Port Vale against Oxford and they went and beat Burton away next time. So maybe you do need to put in these kind of clangers in order to learn a bit about yourselves and a bit about your players, because that was appalling.
And you know, there's 2 teams involved in every football match, George. And maybe there's only
just incredible.
Maybe there's only so much you can do against a Doncaster oversight that are now top of the 10-game form table in League 2, having picked up 21 points in their last 10 games. I was putting a lot of that down to the presence and skill and quality of Hakeeb Adelakun. He wasn't on the score sheet in this game. Molyneux was the one that provided the majority of the goal threat off the other flank. But Grant McCann has hit on something that's working. And got to be nice to see it kind of develop into a strong end of the season, a strong summer where everyone just forgets what a difficult few years it's been and focuses and hopefully have the right people in the right areas within the club to allow for a settled summer with some settled recruitment. And surely Grant McCann, you know, to be fair, credit to everyone, fans included, for throughout this season never really pinning any of the poor spells of form on McCann, because I think there's just this understanding that there's so much scar tissue from the last few years. They know that McCann is a good manager from his first spell and from what he's done elsewhere. And they're going to sort of let him work, which I think is the best approach for them at the moment. Sutton beat Aki, and just to tie off Accrington, they appointed John Doolan, permanent manager, 3-year contract, or a 2 or 3 year contract. He's been the interim after John Coleman departed. And sometimes club statements announcing managers or sacking managers don't contain a huge amount of detail. Sometimes you can read between the lines, and they do provide a little bit of detail. Now, after the initial part of the statement, which was something along the lines of, Accrington Stanley are pleased to announce that interim manager John Doolan has been appointed the permanent manager on a 2.5-year contract, etc., etc. The next sentence was, Doolan, comma, who will work closely with Stanley's academy. Now, this is... you don't even have to read between the lines here. Andy Holt has made it very clear over the last few weeks that Stanley will be cutting costs this summer, that he cannot fill a £1 million hole, which is what they lost in their last accounts. And he's been very open on about the fact that he wants to use Stanley's academy in order to boost and bolster their first team squad. So Doolan is clearly being appointed with that as a huge part of the remit. Of course, it raises a lot of red flags, because it's very, very difficult for a club like Accrington Stanley to maintain EFL status if they are going to take that approach without a huge body of work to prove that they have what it takes to essentially develop and also bed in as first team players a ton of academy graduates. But that's the job, as it seems, for John Doolan. They will be in League Two next year, but certainly have plenty of concerns about the immediate future of them, just on a from a footballing perspective. I should point out that I do very much respect the reasons for the cost cutting. Crewe won, Wimbledon won, these two teams in fifth and ninth now. The Autos got a little bit further away for Crewe, 5 points off Wrexham. Wimbledon dropped 2 places to ninth. Neither side at their best here. A few spells for each team, but not that much cutting edge outside of early goals from John Kaimani Gordon and Rio Adebisi. It's some season that Adebisi's having. And talk about clubs who've proven themselves as academies, and particularly when it comes to translating academy talent and player development into first team contributors. Crewe Alex stand out, of course they do, at this level. And Adebisi is a bit of a poster boy of it at the moment. I love development like Adebisi's, where he's been playing for Crewe for 3 or 4 seasons now. He's 23, he's played over 100 games, but it's this season that Adebisi has made his biggest leap so far from, you know, the sort of player where you watched him, you could see the talent, you could see that there's a nice fullback profile here, he's got a nice mixture of skills, to now basically being able to say he's one of the best fullbacks in League Two, if not the best this season, I would argue. So how many other clubs would have spent that amount of time and patience to wait for someone to be 23 and have played over 100 games and probably put in some poor performances as well as some good ones in that time? And now they have one of the best fullbacks in League Two. And those players are expensive to buy, and possibly even out of reach if you're Crewe Alex. So I just wanted to celebrate Rio Adebisi. That was a lovely strike from him for Crewe's equaliser. George Barrow got a win, 1-0 against Newport. Felt like a very fair reflection of what went down.
Can you just like pause here and then choose any pod we've recorded in the last season where Barrow have won 2-0 at home and just repeat what I've said in those, because it's basically the same. It's an incredible blueprint that they've got. Like, you basically have, you don't create loads, but in Cole Stockton you have someone who puts away a nicely taken finish to give you a deserved lead. You rely on your very reliable keeper to make one, maybe two saves, and Paul Farman, which he did. And you come home thinking, yeah, we deserve to win that. We've done it 2-0, and we're going to do that to any team we play at home. It is amazing what Pete Wild does. And it's just going to make them, like, working here fully on the assumption they're going to finish somewhere between 4th and 7th. They're going to be such an awkward team for anybody in the playoffs, because they are so good at the back. They're so good at preventing the opposition from creating chances. And even though they've had a couple of weird games against the better sides in the league this season, I really think they're going to be such a strong playoff team, because I think going into games at home, knowing that you have such a strong record of beating teams to nil gives you such an advantage. And even at Wembley in games that are, you know, playoff finals are generally pretty cagey and go the way that Barrow home games normally go. And Pete Ward's someone who's, you know, he's so good at setting up his team to counter the threat of the opposition. This was blueprint Barrow, and has been now kind of after that time where the games went a bit crazy. It's been the case for the last few weeks.
The Bluebirds is Barrow's nickname, which always feels a bit weird because they
Bluebird, Barrow, Blueprint.
Yeah, mostly sort of, in my eyes, Bloopers. They're playing. What colours are Barrow playing in your eyes?
White.
Yeah. Those
white with blue epaulettes.
Blueprint Barrow. Second most clean sheets in the league this season. 4 clean
Who's
sheets.
Who's got more than them?
AFC Wimbledon.
That's because they've got future England manager in charge.
4 wins in their last 5. No, 4 clean sheets in their last 5 for Barrow. Blueprint Barrow. Creepy Crawley. We have new members of the playoffs. George, 7th place, Crawley Town, went to Tranmere, 1-3-1.
Incredible. I mean, what they're doing in the last few weeks has blown my mind. Like Crawley looked to me like that classic team, unfancied to start the season, start really fast, get everyone excited, including me, and then just nicely ease back into kind of 16th. And that looked like that was what was going to happen. But the last few weeks and the results have suggested they're going to play a massive part in this. You know, you look back to the kind of mid-February where they won 3 games in a row against Forest Green, AFC Wimbledon and Accrington. They were beaten at Morecambe and then went to Harrogate, beat them, beat Notts County, beat Tranmere with a Stockport draw in between. And the most impressive thing to me is, I think, the manner of the wins, the last couple of wins. You know, the draw against Stockport, yes, it came late, but they were one of the few teams, I would say, where Stockport didn't go there and have it all their own way and get unlucky. This wasn't one of Stockport's games where they were by far the better side and couldn't make their dominance count. They were poor in the first half. They got ahead in the second before conceding, and a point was probably fair. And then here against Tranmere, yes, Tranmere kind of ramped up the pressure from 2-0 down. But in that first 15, 20 minutes, Crawley started so fast and were fully deserving of their lead. And then a good finish from Daniil Orsi to make it 3-1 late on. Like they're just... I mean, Scott Lindsay's stock in my mind goes up and up and up and up. It is mad to think of just over a year ago when Swindon fans were kind of laughing at Crawley taking Scott Lindsay off their hands for a compensation fee, like money well spent. What an appointment that was. Like, absolutely unbelievable. Like, we've criticised a lot of what Crawley have done. But to pluck Lindsay from an underperforming League Two side, to get him in and give him a summer and to get him... having Crawley playing the kind of football they're playing and getting results and having a genuinely big chance of finishing in the top 7, having been favourites to finish bottom of the league. Just incredible.
They advise, don't they, that if you want to be, if you want to have good options as a chef, you should always have beef stock, chicken stock, vegetable stock, and then the tastiest of the lot, Scott Lindsay stock. And that's certainly what we've had all season. It is just amazing. I wanted to mention Jeremy Kelly. He scored their first goal. It was a really nice, accurate strike from the edge of the box. Slightly bouncing ball as well. He did very well to catch it the way that he did. Kelly is a 26-year-old, Cheshire-born American youth international who landed at Crawley in League Two in January, just less than a month after he had joined and then left at Tulsa in the US second tier, having walked out of Memphis in November. This is what we wrote on ntt20.com when he signed. Just absolutely no idea where they have got Jeremy Kelly from, who is doing their scouting, because whether it's a number of players that they signed from non-league football who are making an impact in EFL football for the first time in their careers, all at the same time in a really attractive and, you know, quite complicated style of play in many ways. It's certainly not a straightforward tactical system that they play. Then they just decided to flex even harder on us and pick up this guy from the lower leagues of the US football system. Absolutely incredible. And a nice finish from him. And you got Corey Adai showing brilliant form as well, making big saves here. Most saves in the league this season. The second best save percentage of, as well, of any goalkeeper that's played more than 15 games behind Okonkwo of Wrexham. He has come on so much this season, Adai. And one of the Tranmere fans on NTT 20 squad was like, this guy's massive. Like, how can you actually get the ball past him? And he thwarted a few Tranmere efforts. Six wins in their last eight for Crawley. They are in seventh spot. Will they be the team to make the playoffs? Maybe. But Gillingham might have a say in that as well. George, they went to Morecambe and eventually won 3-2 in what was a sort of surprisingly high-scoring game.
Surprisingly high-scoring because Gillingham games generally aren't, but Morecambe have been fairly entertaining in terms of their games under the new manager. But this was kind of very un-Gillingham, I would say, where Gillingham haven't scored many goals this season and have had some serious finishing issues in parts. But here, they were pretty clinical, albeit with, I would say, some thanks to the Morecambe keeper for Timothy Dieng's goal, where Archie Mayring goal for Morecambe. I'm guessing it's Son. Like Dieng, I've firstly never seen a player make it so obvious he's about to shoot in my whole life, where Dieng gets the ball about 28 yards from goal and there's no one anywhere near him. And he almost takes like a free kick. He like puts it forward, steps back, hits it straight at the keeper. I'm assuming there's Son in Mayr's eyes because he kind of does this weird, like kind of tries to parry it over his head. But I think he could have caught it and it just kind of loops into the goal. A kind of weird goalkeeping clanger, but maybe something that Gillingham have deserved this season. And that was to make it 2-2 after Jordan Slewer put Morecambe ahead, Ollie Hawkins with a rare goal, making it 1-1 before Charlie Brown scored to make it 2-1. Dieng got that one. And then Conor Mahoney, again, capitalising on a poor bit of distribution from Mayr to make it 3-2. So, yeah, a big win for Gillingham. It wasn't their most impressive performance, but it comes off the back of some disappointing results under Stephen Clements, so it might get them back playing the way they were a few weeks ago, where it looked like they were the likely team to finish seventh. But again, it's getting to the stage of the season now where if they lose this game, you think it's going to be very hard for them to get there. But having won it, they've firmly put themselves back into that conversation.
Morecambe have lost their last four. I just worry that they may have run out of gas somewhat, even when they had that amazing run. In particular, they were picking up some exceptional results away from home. It was always like late winners from behind. A lot of them like amazing strikes from range. That game against Tranmere springing to mind. Not necessarily built on what we might consider your classic solid foundations, but a nice assist and a goal as well from Charlie Brown, who's certainly benefiting from having consistent starts pretty much for the first time in his senior career at Morecambe. And that's the opportunity that they're giving quite a few players. And hopefully they'll all benefit from that and the club as well heading into next season under Jed Brannan. And then a game that we did expect to be high scoring and was sort of three goals. I'm not even sure that counts as high scoring, George. Notts 1, Salford 2. As written in Weekend Notes, this was a match between the division's two worst defensive sides, who between them conceded 147 goals from a combined 79 matches. Some quality in the finishing, that's for sure, on the attacking end.
I generally don't like having pops at clubs for being caught playing out from the back, because it's going to happen. It doesn't, you know, if you get caught playing out from the back and you concede a goal once, that doesn't mean that consistently doing it is a bad thing to do. But having put in such a good performance in midweek, beating Bradford 3-0 away from home and not really conceding any chances of note, this was a horrendous performance from Notts County in terms of their, you know, their style of play and just being so naive at times. You know, even McGoldrick, who you think would know a lot better, kind of coming off the bench late on and playing in Callum Morton, who nearly made it 3-1. Like consistently, it's quite funny, the camera that you see in the highlights is obviously in the Notts County fans. You can hear the fans going like, what are we doing? And this is a fan base who are used to watching, you know, Luke Williams' team, are used to watching a heavy possession style. But, you know, when it's not executed consistently, then you've got to ask questions. Conor McElhaney is an artist when it comes to striking the ball low into the corner from the edge of the box. It's what he's done all his career. It's why he's not prolific. It's because it's quite a hard thing to do. But, you know, when he's given those opportunities, there's probably no one really in League Two, or maybe even League One, who you want to get on the end of those. And these were two textbook goals from him and a lovely Dan Crowley finish to continue his very good goal scoring season. So Salford's good run under Carl Robinson continues. I think they're going to be back where they believe they should be probably next season under Robinson. He seems to be getting a really good tune out of a squad who are performing so poorly under Neil Wood. For Notts County, you know, I'm sure they will retain faith in the manager, but it definitely one step forward, two steps back after a good win in midweek and then just really shoot themselves in the foot here.
I'm going to be in the Notts end at Swindon on Friday. So I'm a bit disappointed because clearly they've been spiralling down the table to such an extent that the fans are not thrilled. But I figured after the win against Bradford, if they could back it up with another here, then at least it might be an away end feeling some vague level of positivity and hopefully, you know, showing me their best array of atmosphere, but probably not now. But if you are a Notts fan listening to this, say hi, look after me. I'll buy you a beer. That offer is capped at 5. That offer is capped at 5 beers.
Each?
No, total 5 beers. And lastly, George, Harrogate 3, Bradford 0. Harrogate's 8-game winless streak, which started with a 9-2 defeat, got snapped in front of a record crowd for the Sulphurites. For Bradford, it's 4 defeats in a row, conceding 13 goals. Quite a lot of soul-searching and, as ever, quite a lot of finger-pointing as well. How do you begin to make sense of Bradford City? I mean, in general, but even just the last 3 months' worth of football on the pitch where we've seen, I don't know, make sense of it, please.
I can't. I don't understand what's happened. They've gone from being one of the best teams, I would say, in the whole league over a short period of time, both in terms of results. Their underlying numbers are very strong. It looked like they were finally kind of putting that run of form together that we anticipated. You know, if you look back to that run through February into March, they had a nil draw against Bradford. They beat Wrexham 1-0. They beat MK 4-0. They beat Sutton 1-0. They beat Accrington 3-0. They only conceded one goal in 6 games. That was in a 1-0 draw against Doncaster. So when you're looking at Doncaster being the form team in the whole league, and we've already spoken about Sutton, MK, Wrexham, like this was a tough run of games. They've come away with it with so many points. And then home to Forest Green, Steve Cottrell's Forest Green. And they were, you know, as I said, they had a plenty of opportunities in the game, but they conceded after, I think it was in the first minute from Christian Deutsch. And that just seems to have completely rocked them to the extent that now their performance levels are really, really low. They had 3 consecutive home games. They lost them all against Forest Green, Mansfield and Notts County. And then a 3-0 defeat at Harrogate. Harrogate have a great record against Bradford. And I do wonder if maybe you've got this whole dynamic there where Bradford, according to their fans, don't care about Harrogate. You know, it's probably quite embarrassing when they lose to them, but it's not a rivalry. For Harrogate fans, who, you know, let's remember 25 years ago, Bradford were a Premier League team. The ability to consistently play and beat Bradford is incredible. Like, you know, they see it as a derby. They see it as a big game. So I think when you've got a dynamic where one team sees, you know, a rivalry as being super important and the other, at best, a nuisance, at worst, like an embarrassment because they have such a poor record. It's probably quite a weird game to go into. But Harrogate did it again here despite their recent poor form. And, you know, their playoff chances are not quite done yet off the back of that despite their bad run. Bradford's now surely done with those 4 defeats in a row.
I think when Bradford were in the Prem, Harrogate were in the 8th tier. So that's there quite fun, isn't it? The mobility of the English football pyramid, eh? It's what keeps us all going. A nice way to finish, I think. A nice note on which to finish. Thanks for listening to this reduced NTT20 Monday pod. In order to fill the content gap in our hearts, we actually have a bonus pod coming out on Wednesday. You may remember a few months ago we recorded an episode with Omar Chowdhury of 21st Group. We talked about managers and sacking managers or not sacking managers, and it was a really popular episode that went down very, very well. So we've got Omar back this week, and it's going to be about squad planning, and it's going to be about transfers, and it's going to be an episode that you will want to listen to. So keep yourself locked to the pod feed on Wednesday for the bonus episode this week with Omar Chowdhury. And we'll be back again on Thursday with a betting show ahead of Good Friday's games. So plenty going on the feed this week. Make sure you sign up to ntt20.com. I wrote a really fun article, which I took very seriously last week, in which I selected a 24-man squad from each of the EFL divisions, but could only pick one player per squad, which chucks up some fascinating internal selection discussions. You can see what I went with on ntt20.com. That one's free for all to read and gives you a flavour of the, hopefully, the quality of content that you get as a paid subscriber of ntt20.com. Thanks very much for listening, and go well.